Hey guys, it's Anthony Berardi from Banter BMX Podcast. You're about to listen to the Gabe Weed episode. We did run into some technical difficulties when recording this episode, and unfortunately we lost some of the primary audio for Gabe, and we had to rely on a backup copy, which wasn't as great of a quality in some spots. So and as a result, we had to do some hard edits and... honestly, it's such a good episode. Thanks to Gabe for coming out and doing it. It's definitely worth a listen. He has a million great stories. And John and I were talking, and he's one of the guys we're going to get back on the show just to get a proper quality episode out of it. Like I said, 95% of the audio is perfect. Just 5% I had to go through and do some hard edits, so you'll notice those in there. Thanks again to Gabe for coming on the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to Banter, a BMX podcast with John Doker and Anthony Berardi.
Our next guest hails from Walnut Creek, California. He grew up riding with Flatland great Andrew Arora. He often rode in San Francisco as part of the legendary Golden Gate Park scene, where he sessioned with amazing riders such as Aaron Dahl, Eric Emerson, and Pete Brandt. He turned pro in 93 while riding for Two Hip Bikes and got his first picture in the magazine on the June 93 issue of Ride BMX. By 1996, he was riding and touring for GT Bikes, performing countless shows around the country. He got the cover of the July 99 issue of BMX Plus. In 2006, our guest opened his own skate park in Reno, Nevada. In 2013, he opened his own BMX mail order shop called Cheap Goods, located in Costa Mesa, California. In 2018, he met his soon-to-be bride riding Flatland at the beach. I'd like to welcome our next guest, Gabe Weed. Welcome to the show, Gabe.
Yeah, thank you so much, John, Anthony, for having me. I am, like, super flattered and just honored to be on here with you guys. So thanks for inviting me.
Okay, well, we're honored, too, because this is a little project we just started a few months ago.
And truth be told, I was telling John I had a couple people reach out to me and say, when are you getting Gabe Weed on the show?
Really?
When is Gabe going to be on?
That's so cool.
You got fans.
That's so cool. Because, you know, like, you got the guys in the 80s, and, like, everyone wants to interview them. But then when you get grouped in the 90s, there's kind of a lot of us, you know? So it's cool to be, like, to get picked, you know? When, as the years go, decades go on, there's more and more riders that get, like, you know, are part of the industry, you know? So... very happy, man.
I think your name came up when Anthony and I decided we wanted to interview somebody that has a lot of experience with touring.
Okay, cool.
And then we were thinking to ourselves, well, who's still touring? Who still does shows? Who's been around and who's relevant and who hasn't had a podcast? I don't know of you getting one yet.
No.
You came up.
Thanks. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm happy. Yeah.
All right. Well, with that said, let's go ahead and start. Start with what got you into the riding? What got you into riding? What are your roots, Gabe?
You know what? This is a story that I'm really, like, happy over. It's like I got into freestyle Flatland not knowing anything about BMX. I didn't watch Rad and get pumped to ride. I didn't go see, like, a GT or Haro story or Haro tour. I didn't really, you know, I watched ET and I saw the bikes, but didn't think nothing of it, you know? It's basically like I just got sick of riding crappy bikes. Like, like my dad was like a high school teacher, and he supported a wife and three kids on a high school salary. And I had like terrible bikes, and like they're like Jemco, which is like the Kmart of nowadays, and like department store bike, and they always broke. And I remember one time I was like, I sent you a photo, but it was like this. Almost like a girl's bike. It had a banana seat.
I'll try to share that.
Oh my gosh. And it had like these U-bars, you know, like there's no middle part.
I had the same bike, man. Same thing.
Oh my gosh.
The monkey bars.
Banana seat. Oh yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the sissy bar. And I was like, I mean, if I saw that nowadays with the kid, I'd be like, dude, your parents love you? Like,
those are the bikes before BMX came in, you know? So.
Yeah, I guess. So like, I remember riding home one day and the handlebars just broke off right at the bend. And I rode home one handed. And I was like, I am over this. I am going to get like a good bike. And like maybe there was a kid in my neighborhood, like Dan Bennett, that had like a he had like a Diamondback and did some power skids, but I never saw tricks. I never saw anyone jump. I even remember like one time I saw like these doubles near this park near my house, and it was like a mattress in the middle. And I don't know what I was thinking, but I tried to jump it with that bike, and I just rolled off and like totally like ate it. And I was like, that's it. I'm over this. And my parents didn't have any money. So I just basically like went and got a paper route and saved up some money. And I went to the bike shop before I got the paper out, and I saw like a Chrome GT Mach 1. And I was like, that's what I want. You know, like I love like the GT with the wings. And so I got a paper out, and I worked for like a couple months, and I saved up a couple $100, maybe like 200, rolled down to that bike shop to get the Mach 1. And behold, right next to the Mach 1 was this blue bike with white parts and had all these things sticking out of it. And I was like, what is all this? I'm like, but I don't know what it is, but this bike, I want this bike. Like, I love the way it looks. And it was the Hawaiian blue 1987 GT Performer.
Wow.
And so like, yeah, I brought it home and I didn't know what it was for. And I just know I liked the white mags and the, you know,
oh, yeah,
the fork standers and the frame standers. And I brought it home and I was just staring at it. And I was like, what are all these things used for? And I rode that bike down to my local grocery store. It was like Alpha Beta. And I saw this magazine. It looked like someone was doing tricks on my same bike, and it was a BMX Plus. And I brought that BMX Plus home, and I studied it, and I just all by myself, just out in front of my house, like trying to do these tricks. I learned like curb endos and like lawnmower, and I got some of the kids in my neighborhood kind of into it. I mean, them coming out, be like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I'm trying to do these tricks in this magazine." And that was like, that was it. And then, you know, then eventually I learned about Rad, and I got that, and I watched it.
Let me stop you there. What year are we talking?
Yep. 1987, the summer of 1987.
So that was an 87 Pro Performer, S2.
Yeah. Performer.
The S-Bend.
S-Bend.
Okay. So you kind of got a late start for a guy your age, in a way.
Kind of, huh?
Because you would have been how old at that point?
13. I was 13.
Well, how old are you now?
46, almost 47 this month.
Okay, so you're exactly a year younger than me. All right.
Yeah, and so it was 1987 GT Performer.
Didn't mean to stop you there. I was just curious. We got to have a picture of which bike it is. So okay, carry on.
And and then so I guess I could lead to my next thing we're talking about is so I just rode all by myself, and I got some of the kids in my neighborhood, and I that's what I want to do. And because I tried like every sport when I was a kid. I tried like soccer, football, taekwondo. I like soccer, but I remember like getting tackled, and football is like, I'm over this. And then I got funny, like, oh my gosh, I got a funny like football story. Like, you know, it was like super hot. I couldn't, like, I was out there in the heat, like going to like the camp, and I was so sick of it. And my parents and my mom got me like this big bottle of water. All right. And she's like, here, just take this and drink this all day. Well, it was a bottle of bleach that she cleaned out. She put water in a Clorox bleach, and I brought it to like the football camp. And everyone's like, dude, this guy is crazy. He's drinking bleach.
Was it cleaned out well?
she said it was. I mean, I had the whitest teeth on that team. So I remember like doing training camp. I got the heat, and I did taekwondo, and I remember getting flipped over and the wind knocked on me. I was like, no, I don't want to do this. I just love like riding my bike. And so I'll kind of lead to the next thing is, so at my middle school, it was like seventh or eighth grade, Foothill Middle School in Walnut Creek. There was this really popular guy that I knew rode BMX. Everyone said he was pretty good, but I was scared to death of him, 'cause I was like this chubby, like kind of nerdy kid. And he was like a popular guy, man. He would hang out with like these cute blonde cheerleaders and like, like everyone want to be around him. And his name was Andrew Arroyo.
Okay, there it is. Arroyo. So we were trying to figure out how to say it.
Arroyo, yeah, like a ditch, canyon ditch, right?
Arroyo, okay.
And and that's how I knew of him. And then, so a couple months after I was riding, like I had just avoided him at school. I don't know how I didn't meet up, see him at school. But I was riding outside, like right down the street from my house, and I ran into him and some friends. I was like, okay, man, like, I'm down. Let's see what's going on. and I remember him being really cool. And he's like, hey, man, so you ride freestyle? I was like, yeah. He's like, well, can you do some tricks? I just busted out. I did like a no-footed endo. I did a lawnmower. And the, my finale, I did like pulled a tail whip. I was so pumped. And Andrew Rowe was like, "Ooh, we got a ride." And then I just remember riding home and I was like, "This is, man, I'm so pumped. This is what I want to do." And
was he more advanced than that at that time, was he not?
Yes, he was. I mean, our flatland level was about the same, but he rode BMX. We talk about this, like he raced.
Okay.
So he raced and stuff. And so he had like maybe a year on me with like bike skills.
Okay.
And and then I was so into it where I saved up another couple hundred bucks and I sold my blue Performer and I went and ordered a 1987 Pro Freestyle Tour team model in Dayglow pink.
Whoa.
Nice.
I tell Martin Aprio all the time. I was like, dude, I had your picture on my wall. And like, that's the bike I wanted. So
that
bad.
Bike was so. Hey, I got to tell this Andrew Aurora story. Okay. Cause I don't have many. There's basically one, 94 Chicago BS. That place was packed. I don't know. Were you there, Gabe? Probably.
You know, I think I missed 94. Okay. I was there in 93.
All right. So maybe it was 93. I can't remember. No. Andrew was there for sure. Wait. On a blue Trickstar, okay. Which was.
Yes.
Is that the same year?
No, it was a different year. Actually, I was there in 92. And then I definitely wasn't there in 94. Okay. There was a year.
It's pretty far to be coming from California. But anybody anybody went to that contest almost on the East Coast at that time. It was a big deal. And it was packed. And people were trying to ride Flatland. And I'm a dumb kid working on lard yards, and Andrew's doing like dump truck, something crazy.
Yeah.
And I remember like just being a dumbass kid, like I was basically in his way, and he was pissed, dude. And I'm like, like I'm riding over here, fuck you, dude. I don't care if you're doing a death truck line. He threw his bike at me, right? So for years, I was like, fuck Andrew Rohrer, that guy's a dick. But in hindsight. Yeah. I'm a dick for being in his way because I was doing lard yards and that guy was doing death truck combos. And Andrew Rohrer is admittedly one of my favorite riders of all time. If you look at that old footage, he's so smooth, so dialed.
Yes.
Even like, who was it that came out of Canada? It was the pink bike guy, Andrew Ferris.
Oh, Ferris,
15 years later is biting his complete combos. I don't know if you ever noticed
That's pretty cool. Yes, the junkyard to death. Yeah.
Man, anyway, so I apologize if Andrew ever listens to this. I'm the dick that was in your way, and he just finally threw his bike at me.
Oh my God, he was kind of a snob back. Yeah, he was kind of like.
Well, you know, at the time I was like, I'm going to throw fists with this guy, but then, you know, he's probably bigger than me, so anyway.
Yeah, he's still.
That wouldn't be the first time.
No, I was a little feisty back then. So. All right.
He was feisty.
I didn't mean
too,
to cut you off, but I had to get that in.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Yeah, he butted heads with a few people here and there.
Amazing, amazing rider, though. Absolutely. Oh, so it was just the two of you for the most part?
You know what? Like, there was like, so it was me and him, and then there's other guy, Jeff Tsai, and there's like, and we rode, all three of us rode together pretty consistent. And then there was a couple guys that came and went, like there's this guy, Dan Yust, and like another guy, this guy, Seth Moeller, who I'm still good friends with, and he lives out here. But basically, like a lot of guys just, they started for like a year, and then they found out how hard it was, and they're like, we'll move on. And of course, you know, we all started riding together when we were like 14 to 15, and then as soon as 16 hits, like you pretty much lose like 95% of you.
Sure.
Yeah. But no, it was pretty much just us and Jeff rode together up to the time we went to college. And then it was just Drew and I after that. So, I mean, we were pretty much riding consistently together, like from the probably late 87 all the way to like to the time he probably moved to like SoCal, which is like, you know, mid 94 or something when he moved out there, I think.
That's cool to think that you probably rode as he learned to get to that level. I mean,
yes. And he was the most frustrating guy ever to ride with because he picked up stuff so quick and it was like, it drove me crazy. Right. Like he learned a hitchhiker in like a week. I just, it took me like 1 to 2 months to learn it. And I mean, he did kind of cheat a little bit. He found these little rollers in his garage door and he put them on his bar end so he could drop his bars down and roll it.
He's not the only one.
But he only needed to use it for like a day or so, but he learned stuff so fast and it was so smooth. And like the tricks that I saw him do, like, it's too bad. Like in the film, I'm like every single day, I got some old footage of him. That's pretty rad, but But he, like, watching him ride in person, like, that guy did some amazing tricks, man, constantly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Big fan of his riding. So yeah. When is it that you guys ventured out to Golden Gate Park?
Oh, man, this is so cool. So, like, we started riding together, and then we met this other local rider, Joe Pellucci, and he was funny. He was only, like, we were probably, like, 15, and he was, like, 18, and he seemed like it might as well. You might as well be like 50 or something.
Right.
You know, when you're like, yeah, when you're 15 and you meet someone that they could drive, you're like, oh my gosh, this guy is like so old. And and you might like this, John, is he had a diesel rabbit.
Sweet.
Yeah, I know. And so we met him and he was a little bit older than us and he had a rabbit and he's like, hey man, like you ever guys go out to Golden Gate Park? This is probably like 88. And right now it's like, hey, everyone like, it's so cool. They on Sundays they shut down the whole park and you just get all these freaky people and like roller skates and like danced around and there's a little section of the park where all the BMXers meet, you know. Cool. And gosh, we went there and like just the memories from that place and like it was just so the riders we had watched would be like Aaron Dahl, Maurice Meyer, Drob,
Maurice,
yeah,
and then Eric Emerson, Pete Brandt, and Carly Garcia, and those guys were just. Man, they were doing all the newest tricks, you know, like we watched like the videos like Dorkin, but to go see those guys in person, seeing like Eric Emerson do like the smoothest whiplashes, like, and then like a hang five to like Pinky Squeak to Locomotive and then Pete doing all his stick bee stuff. It was like, dude, it was the most amazing stuff watching those guys ride like every Sunday. And pretty much we watched them for like a few hours on Sunday and then we just went and were fueled all week to learn everything.
I can only imagine. I think Anthony, you had reality TV, right? And we watched that and that was groundbreaking for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, groundbreaking. So now you missed the Curb Dogs. That was before
yes.
you. So like Vander Speck and
just missed him. I'm pretty sure. I think Andrew saw him, but I think he died. Like, man, like I was only riding for like a few months. I remember like my teacher coming up to me and saying, like, I heard like some professional bike rider dies. Like, who? He's like Dave Vander Speck. I was like, I didn't really know of him at the time. So
right. We'll have to get Maurice Meyer on and find out a little more about those guys because pretty interesting history there for sure.
Yeah, and just like I mean, after going to Golden Gate Park, like 6 months later, like all those guys are riding Ozones, you know. Then there's the Ozone crew with like you know Pete, Eric, and Carly are on Ozones. And then
you ever get on one?
Now, yes, yeah, totally, man. I always wanted like the and then Aaron Dahl and Maurice Meyer they were on Skyway Street Beat. So that's what I watched. Right. I watched Street Beats and Ozone with Method Air. That's the nicer one, right?
Method Air.
Yeah, so they all had the white one, and I wanted the white one so bad, but by the time I had the money to get one, like, the whites were all gone. I had a black one. I had a chrome and black one.
Sweet.
And
still a nice bike.
Oh, my gosh. You know what's funny is those things broke so fast. Like, they broke in, like, a couple, like, 6 months, because there's, like, it was all the, like, the seat post area, because there's, like, probably, like, 50 welds right there.
There's one floating around in Ontario that I think we all rode at one point. Did you ever ride that bike, Anthony?
No, but I remember went around Durham quite a bit.
Everybody ended up riding it, had it for a while. Cool.
And they're just like they came and gone as fast as like you know, fast. Just as long as they start as fast as they started, they were gone. Just
the
as
top
fast,
tube so. Was pretty high. I remember on it.
Yeah, but it was everything about that bike company was just so cool. Their team, their logo, and
yeah, Ozone was the shit at the time for sure.
Yeah,
and I think and they had like a grassroots kind of co-sponsorship where basically they gave you a discount.
Yes,
I can't remember how it worked.
I think they sponsored like 90% of the riders in NorCal. Like, God, yeah, everyone up there, man, that was sponsored by Rhino Zone.
It's either that or Skyway.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny, we just got into a conversation with our last guest, Ben, about how he went to the circus when it came to Peterborough, thinking that it was Jeff Cotter. And
we
think Jeff Cotter rode for Ozone. Does that name ring a bell?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Jeff Cotter's from out here.
He's supposed
Jeff
to be,
Cotter's out here.
You know, at the circus. Instead, it was some carny on a you know artistic freestyle bike.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
The guy was only 50 years old, but anyways.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Cotter rode for Ozone, and he lives out in like he's part of the Bellflower crew, Bellflower and Lakewood. And there's a lot of riders that come from out there.
Okay. Well, we're figuring it out. All right.
Yeah. Scurfer man, right? That's what he did. Like,
yes, that's right. Scurfer.
The can-can scurfer.
No, that trick. Have you ever learned that trick?
Dude, I can't even do surfers still. I don't know why. I got to learn it. I know.
It's
crazy. I never learned it.
Show rider?
I know. I know. Yeah, seriously. I mean,
I think you can do it, Gabe. I think you got a surfer in you yet.
Piggy, he always said they love to surf. They love to surf. the Cirque du Soleil show that he loves.
All right, so let's see. So were there any other riding influences you had before you went to Southern California?
I mean, definitely like all the plywood hoods. Like, I mean, my first, you can always tell the rider's error from what Dorkin he likes, you know, and mine was Dorkin 2, which is like, you know, 88, you know, that's like, we got Dorkin 2 from Trend Bike Source, and we just wore that thing out, man. So like, I loved all the plywood hoods, man, like definitely Jones and like Eaton. And then I liked watching all the, I mean, back then you just like watching the ramp guys too. You get pumped to watch Matt Hoffman, and dude, I love watching Rick Molterno and Dennis McCoy. And that was always the coolest thing, is like, so many riders like dropped off like in like 88, 89. And like the guys that, the Flatlanders, that were able to keep up, like Rick Molterno and McCoy, that was like just amazing. It's just really impressive that those guys were, anyone that worked through with the rolling tricks and was able to upkeep. I mean, it was just mad respect for them.
Was there ever anybody better at being an all around rider than McCoy and Molterno?
I don't,
like Flatland, yeah, ramp, like, you know, you used to see Fiola ride, yeah, Flatland, but you could tell he was a ramp rider. Yeah. And
I you're right. Like there's been other riders that at times they've been really good at certain things, but at this, like, to compete in pro flat and pro ramp, like bust out some, like, I mean, some rolling walkover and then bust out and do like a 9-foot, 10-foot air, like on a sketchy quarter pipe. Yeah, you can't.
It's only so many, only so many.
Dude, you just can't. Yeah. It's like, I mean, I was thinking about it today. I was like, the last good Flatlander to be able to bust out, probably do like an 8-foot air, was probably like Sean McKinney. I know DeGroote could probably get a lot of air, but I mean, McKinney could drop in on like the Soul Bowl, like a 12-foot vert ramp, and bust out a big air.
Yeah.
Big X up. So.
Yeah, I remember him doing that. Him and, was it Nate?
Nate Hansen.
Yeah. He got all rampy out there, and then he just kind of dropped off the face of the planet.
I see Nate all the time. He's a big surfer. I see him, and I was like, he still rides ramp a little bit. And I was like, man, you don't miss Flatland? Like,
oh, he still does ride then.
Yeah, he still rides. He's got two kids, and he's still super smooth at bowls and stuff. But he like surfs every day. Like, he'll be like, I'll be getting to the spot to go ride, and he's like leaving after his session.
So. I did see him at One Love, and he was hanging out, so that was cool. I was like,
I'm just. Every time I see him, I was like, don't you miss Flatland? Like, dude, you ripped and like you're dialed. I'm like, he's like, yeah, I was thinking about riding my Flatland bike still. He's still got like some bike from like 2000, like some old like 40-pound DK or something. I was like, you got to get a new bike.
Like, he's still chomping on the straw.
Oh, what was that?
He's still stomping. He always had a straw in his mouth, you know? So.
Oh, yeah, straw. Exactly. Yeah, the straw. Exactly. But I mean, his ramp bike is all new school, but I mean, his Flatland bike's like, No, I mean, 35 pounds, I'm sure. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a little much at this point, right?
Yeah.
All right, so, well, cool.
But yeah, but no, I always, the plywood hoods and like, yeah, McCoy and definitely like anyone on the, anyone on the Dorkin videos, like Mira and, you know, who else? Like we watch Chris Young and just all those people.
Jay Muron comes to mind.
Stapleton.
Yeah, Jay. Yeah, Jay was fun to watch. Yeah, Jay for sure.
A lot of people got in those videos, and those videos were quite influential, I think, for everybody.
Yeah, Dorkin. I still this day, man, if I popped in Dorkin 2 right now, I'd get goosebumps and butterflies, because I just remember watching that stuff so much and like wanting to learn everything.
Yeah, and we used to watch them 50 times. Yeah, yes. Now you watch a video and like, you're on to the next thing. It's too much. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Just having that hard copy Dorkin, and you're just so pumped to get the next Dorkin. You're like, oh my gosh, it's coming out. Let's get it.
Okay, so we know you made the move to Southern California, but before we get to that, we got to talk about my boy Mutt.
Oh, yeah. That is a funny story.
So, carry on. Yep.
All right, so yeah, good old Mutt. Like, basically, yeah, if you rode in the 90s, you know Mutt, you know?
I think most of us know Mutt somehow.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And the crazy thing was, this is probably like 1988, and I was down that same Alpha Beta, and it was already after I met Drew. I had my Dayglo Pink GT, and I was probably picking up probably a magazine or getting a Thrifty's ice cream or something. And I see this dude, older than me. He had a chrome 24-inch Boss, and he had like this mullet. And he's looking at my bike. He's like, I don't want to make fun of my bike. I always gotta like do my impression.
He's fine with it. He calls himself Mutt.
He's like, yo, dude, what's up? You ride BMX? I was like, yeah. He's like, dude, I ride BMX too. And so I start talking to him. Like, dude, I was 15. He was 28. he's 13 years old now, apparently. Yeah, you just turned 60. Okay. Actually, Drew was trying to get me down for his 60th birthday.
Oh, man.
And actually I got him like a hard number plate, and I got it signed by Nate Hansen and Edgar.
Oh, hell
Placentia.
Yeah. Dude,
yeah, so and I sent it down to Drew, and they had like a big get together too. It's funny.
Man, he's housed a lot of BMXs over the years, even myself included.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, sponsored riders too, man. Yeah, so
gave out tires. He's still doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, he's down for the cause, man. I always tell him.
Shout out to Mutt, man. Much love.
Shout out to Mutt. Yeah, yeah. So so I see him, and the funny thing was, like, oh yeah, so I'm gonna go home. He's like, okay, I'll go home too, and like he's following me. I was like, okay, I'm gonna take a left here. He's like, well, me too. And I was like, I'm gonna take a right here. He's like, oh, me too. And all of a sudden I get to my house, and I remember my mom was outside. She's like freaking out, man. She's like, who is this guy, you know? And basically, dude, Mutt lived on the same exact street as I did, San Benito, but he was like another like two blocks down.
No way.
On my exact street. Crazy.
You thought this guy was like some pervert or something.
I know. And as his wife riding away, he's like, all right, see you later. He's like, and he started howling.
I love it.
Oh my gosh. And here's my mom. Like, who is that? I stay away from
him. That's the best. Awesome.
Yeah. Then that's how we met Mutt. And like, he was really cool because we were like 15, and he'd buy parts for us. And like, he had this like old Chevy, he had the Chevy S10, and it was yellow, and we called it the banana boat. And we'd ride in the back. He'd take us to spots. And, I have a funny story about the S10 too, man. Like,
give it to us. We want to hear it.
Okay. So like, we were 16, but we didn't have cars yet. I know. And, so we were
riding,
16
man.
At our, yeah. Yeah. We're just riding. Exactly. Like you did not have money for gas or like a vehicle. And so we ride Mutt, and we're like, we got this crazy idea to make a copy of his truck key. So we went and took his truck key. Went to like Ace Hardware, made a copy of it. And Drew and I, so we went to school this at Northgate, but we also took like this metal class in Concord, and it was like not too far away from where Mutt lived. And Mutt worked the graveyard shift at like a gas station. So he worked like, I don't know, like 12 to like 8 p.m. or 12 p.m. to 8 a.m. or something.
Right.
Or 12 a.m. Yeah, 12 a.m. to 8 a.m. And so we knew he'd get home and then just sleep all day, and we just wanted like him to like we would like freak out, but he never said anything. So one day we park his car like the next stall over. He didn't say anything for a few days. Then we parked it a few stalls over. He never said anything. Then we parked it at the carport like across the other driveway. He never said anything. And finally, we're just like, finally after we got our license and we didn't care anymore, we parked his car like down the street.
Surely he must have realized. He just didn't peg you guys for that kind of, you know, these are my friends. They wouldn't steal my truck.
And we always say, like, Mutt is smarter than what people think he is. And I think he's like one of those guys that he just wanted to mess with us. Like, he just wanted to drive us nuts. Like, he knew the whole time.
Oh, maybe. Maybe he's the one that had the upper hand there.
I know.
So you told him? You told him eventually?
No, we never told him. He probably, if he listens to this podcast,
he's going to be finding out.
Yeah. Never ever confronted him, man.
Oh man.
And then we did something else to him. Like, he would always ride with us, and he'd always try the same tricks and stuff. And I mean, we're like, well, I wonder if he'd notice if we switched his brakes. We switched his brakes. We made his back brake the front brake, and we made his front brake the back brake. And he rode all day like that. Didn't say anything.
Oh, he must have been fucking with you guys. Yeah, well, shout out to Mutt.
Shout out to Mutt, man. Housing all the riders.
Awesome. I knew you'd have a couple stories to share. That's beautiful. Yeah. All right. So, I know you went to school to be an aircraft mechanic.
I
don't know why I know that, but
No, it comes up every once in a while. But so, like, yeah. So I was riding. you know, riding 89 and rode super serious. And by the time I was good, was like 90, like super good, like competing in pro, it was like 93 is my first pro contest. And flew myself out to Chimersville, Pennsylvania, the BS contest.
That's right. I remember you there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great
cool.
contest.
And,
great contest.
Oh, man.
Such
so
a good
cool.
contest.
And, yeah. And so I flew myself out there, got my own hotel room first night. The second night I shared, like, I roomed with, like, a second night I met Sean Peters and, like, Paul
the Rat Tail?
Paul Palmer.
Paul Palmer.
Yeah, and Trey, Trey, yeah. Trey Paul Palmer, Trey.
Trey
Leaper.
Yeah,
Leaper.
Leaper still riding.
I met all those guys there.
Palmer was a good rider, by the way.
Yeah,
amazing.
Dude, yeah.
He's an underrated guy. Rest in peace.
He's the one that did, like, the pedaling, like, upside down, like that Matt Wilhelm does.
Kind of like the blender thing.
Yeah, the blender, exactly.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, basically I flew myself out there for my first pro contest. Probably spent, like, $400, and I got third place in pro. Yes. Worked for a few years, yeah.
Okay, I didn't realize. Cool. I got an associate's in automotive technology, so sort of simpler.
And so, I did that for a few years, and, you know, some jobs I liked, some I didn't, and one of my favorite jobs was, like, around, like, 96, and everything was going good, and then, boom, like, the X Games come out, and all of a sudden I hear about all these riders, like, doing shows and making money, and I remember, like, in probably, like, let's see, so I moved down to SoCal in 96, I don't know if it was, maybe it was that year where I went and saw a Two Hip show, and I saw Sean Peters. And I remember talking to Sean McKinney. He's like, oh, yeah, Sean Peters, he's living with us, and he's making a living off riding. I remember going, like, dude, Sean Peters is good, but I'm better than him. I'm gonna do this. So I quit my job as an airplane mechanic and moved down to, like, to SoCal. And before I did that, I did kind of, like, go see some GT shows. Up in NorCal, and I met, like, Robert Castillo, and I met Ruben Castillo.
Okay.
And I gave them my demo tape.
I shared that today on Instagram.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I saw that. Thanks. Good Still
stuff.
To this day, those are, like,
good
some
tricks.
Of my favorite tricks of all time. Thanks, man. Like, just, yeah. Just good time, man. Just, like, I had a full-time job, but I still rode, like, every day. And I was just learning a lot of stuff constantly. And then I gave them a demo tape. And Woody got it, and he didn't really say anything about sponsoring me, and, like, well, you know, we'll let you know if, you know, anything happens. But then I was like, forget it, I'm moving down to SoCal, you know. And I moved down to quit my job, packed up my truck where I could fit in there, moved down to Lakewood, and I moved in to Sean McKinney, just like kind of like Mutt. He housed a ton of pro riders.
Sure, back in the day, everybody
was
there.
Yeah, toy. And then so I was there for like 2 weeks, and I was like, man, this is cool, but I did not move to SoCal to live in Lakewood and ride Lakewood Mall, like down the street from Compton. and then I was like, I'm moving to Huntington Beach. And I moved to Huntington Beach, and I started rooming with Ruben Castillo in this little small place we had. And all of a sudden, like, Woody's like, hey, man, like, you know, you want a bike? And I was like, yeah. So he gave me, like, back in the day, like, they'd give you a complete bike and you're a pump. I mean, you got, that's what you rode, like a complete, he gave me a complete dyno. Mm-hmm. And so I got that bike, and then maybe a month later, there was a Seal Beach bicycle stunt contest, and I got like sixth there, and I got on TV, and then I just started. Yeah, I basically got picked up by GT right after that.
And wow. You started touring with them?
Yes, that was 96, and I did some random shows, and it wasn't until like probably 97 that I was fully like touring with them. Like
Summer
I did
tour.
Like, yeah, I did do. I did get this like offer that Robert hooked me up with, and it was at you ever hear about the shows I did in Branson, Missouri for the magician?
Nope.
Kirby Van Burch. Oh my god, I did a full-on stage show for the summer '97, and it was for a guy that Robert used to do shows with in Vegas, and I did that in all summer. And man, I'm talking like it was like two shows a day, like on a stage for like this magician, like a comedian, and it's kind of like a variety act, and I did that, and then it's so funny. I think that's maybe
for bus tours,
kind of like, yeah, I was in Branson, so it was kind of older people,
yeah.
And so I did that, and then but then as soon as I was done with that, I was like, pretty much that's when I was like full-on show, like turn full-time show with GT, like in 97.
Like, if this guy can get through that, he's worth it. Maybe we'll bring him on the road. All right, and who did you tour with when you first started touring?
Oh, my first summer tour was this is crazy. It was Dave Volker, nice. Brian Blyther, and the announcer was Jimmy Coleman that announced all the X Games stuff. So that was my first summer tour.
Wow. So those guys were still touring in the late 90s.
Yeah, totally, man. And they did it for another few years, like up until like, late 97 to at least like 2000s, you know?
I think I saw a GT show, and it was after David broke his neck. No, Brian. Brian broke his neck, sorry. And so Brian was announcing, and Volker was riding. And who else? Maybe Trevor showed up at that show? But that was early 2000s. Yeah. Very cool.
Trevor to be the contest writer, so he did not do that many shows for a while because they
is
just,
that right?
Oh man, they did not. They want him to win the X Games. You know, they wanted
really.
Like, yeah. Oh my gosh, it was like Woody is one competitive sucker, man.
Yeah. We won't talk about Woody too much.
But
we've butted heads a few times, but that's interesting. I would have thought that they were just using Trevor for shows, but they.
Yeah, no.
But he was like, winning everything for like a decade.
Yes, and that was like, you know, that was like, yeah, Woody wanted, you know, Woody was really into the contest placings and getting on the, like, TV and stuff, and that's how he kind of pulled his budget together for, like, pulling sponsors. And but so I became, like, the main show writer, and, like, you know, I competed, like, till about probably, like, 2002 or 3, and then I started, my placings started dropping a lot. You know, I was getting, like, 5th and 6th, and then as soon as, like, this whole new section of guys popped up, like Matt Wilhelm, like Terry Adams, and like, and then I started getting bumped down to like 12th. I started getting bumped down, and Marty Copa, like, so I started getting bumped down like 12th and 13th. I was like, you know what, man, I'm just like, I'm down to do just shows all the time. So
did you compete in X Games?
Yes, yeah, 98 and 99.
Okay,
yeah.
cool yeah, right on. Cool.
Yes,
interesting. And GT's, you know, had a team for a long time, and they've sponsored a lot of riders, and 2HIP as well. I mean, shoot, everybody's ridden for 2HIP. You got to give Ron credit for finding the talent. He always seems to find it, and then it goes somewhere else.
Yeah.
I actually was a tour manager for Ron in 2003, so that was kind of my initiation into doing shows.
He was actually the first show I ever did was for 2HIP, man. It was like, I think it was Vacaville. It was like outside like San Francisco, and I think it's the first show I ever did.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting company for sure. Interesting guy.
we actually butted heads a little bit because he gave me like a Stout Boy, and I was like, his bike was terrible. I said like, oh my god, the Stout Boy is like the worst frame. But
now they had a Flatland bike too.
They've had a few, man. Like, they did the, I mean, they David did Daniel do, Rick Ross Smith one. Did have one, like the Terra Firma.
Terra Firma, that's it. Yeah, that was a pretty cool bike.
That was legit, yeah. That was before, like, yeah. But
I think somebody who's working for Ron really kind of stepped up his game, I think. Yeah, because of the pork and all those wacky frames were, I mean, they're cool, but they're weird.
Yeah, totally wacky.
Even the wall, remember that bike?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Bobby Carter used to ride one of those, and I don't know why. He rode Flatland on that I don't know. Anyway.
With the removable bash guard, yeah.
The only person that could ride a wall and rip was Trevor Meyer.
It worked for him.
Perfect for him.
So I just wanted to bring up that I remember bumping into you at a contest in Nashville.
Yes.
I guess it was 95 or 96.
I think, you know what, I'm pretty sure that's when I was doing those Branson shows. And
You drove there. And I sparked up a conversation with you. I remember you being super friendly, and I was kind of
cool.
Gabe was cool, and you busted ass. You killed it riding Flatland, and I was just getting in with the whole Tennessee crew with Bobby Fischer.
Yes.
And I got to say, you remember Bobby Fischer, right?
Oh, my gosh, so much,
right.
Yeah.
That, Fischer that tires. Cover picture that, of you on BMX Plus, I swear it looks like Bobby Fischer to me.
I know. I do get mixed up with him sometimes,
Okay, especially that you know, cross-footed, because that was kind of his signature move, too.
Yeah, spinning like that. Yeah, he's from Knoxville, right?
Knoxville, Tennessee. Yeah, I lived there for a year, rode with those guys. And I think maybe that was after this contest, but anyway.
Now, I remember Nashville. I think that was the only – I think I won that contest. I think it was the only pro contest I ever won.
Well, I think rightfully so. I went to a contest, I think, in Nashville, but maybe it was Knoxville, that Ivan showed up at. Do you remember that guy? He was a hood, really tall guy. Used to ride with Kevin Jones. There must have been a different. I think it was like the Electric Boogaloo contest or something crazy. Ballroom. So maybe it was a different contest. But anyways, my brain's just everywhere.
Yeah. Let's
move ahead to the skate park. I remember you had a skate park in Reno, and I thought that was crazy because you're a Flatlander. Obviously, you ride everything.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so basically, like, I was kind of getting burnt out on touring. Like, it was around, like, 2003-ish, and, you know, GT kind of changed hands a bunch of times with the owners, and then Woody decided to, like, move, like, his whole team and his show program over to Giant.
Yeah.
And then Woody was really smart how he worked it, man. Like, he got Giant as a sponsorship, but it was his team. So he could, like, he had full control over the budget and the sponsorships. Like he pulled, like, a lot of sponsorships on GT, and that money would, like, filter into, like, the racing or the mountain bike team. So now
he was getting it all for his team.
Oh, my God.
Giant.
He knows how to work it.
I heard he's a hustler. I mean, he's done pretty well for himself.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. So he moved to Giant, and it just wasn't the same, man. There wasn't that many shows, and, like, we didn't have salaries anymore. And I was just kind of like, I just felt like it was time to try something different. And I knew some people up in Reno, and I actually met, like, an investor. And I did some show for this gold company out there, and he was in the crowd. And Jimmy Coleman announced that, like, I want to start up skate park 5 years ago. And someone made, like, a video with her, and, like, everyone freaked out. I'm like, oh, my God, this girl's so good. And I was like, ooh, she was probably this good when she was 10 years old, man. Like, you know, like, she's been this good forever. And she writes her Colt now, and she's got her own, like, signature frame, and, like, most likely she'll probably be in the Olympics because she's definitely one of the top. Yeah, she's definitely top three in the girls, and she is the most stylish girl rider. Like, you know, there's a couple girls that do a lot of tricks, but she is the one that could do transfers and, like, really stylish transfers and just big air, like almost like a Tom Dugan, like a girl, you know?
Right?
Like, super stylish and blast higher than anyone, and but she'll most likely be one of the main girls in the Olympics for sure.
Girls have certainly stepped up their game in the last few years. I guess with the Olympics coming, the level is impressive.
Yeah, and she spent, like, the last year or two, like, she was at Daniel Dare's park, like, just living there, like, riding every day. Like, she learned a lot of new tricks, and she could ride street. But I think she lives out here now, or maybe she's back in Reno. But anyways, this is actually how I started Cheap Goods. Cheap Goods BMX was actually started in, like, 2005. And I opened up the shop, like, a real storefront, like, 2013. But so it was, like, 2005, and I was closing the skate park, and I still had all this inventory.
You had a pro shop, I did.
Pro shop, exactly. And there's stuff that I had for, like, close to 2 years, and I listed them, like, I listed it on the internet and eBay, and it sold in, like, 2 days. I was like, dude, this is, like, a no-brainer. Like, this is what
I've been sitting on this stuff for 2 years.
I know. This is what I'm going to do. So I, you know, I changed, okay. I made, like, another name to, like, kind of separate it from the skate park.
Okay.
And skate park was called Open Ground Skate Park. So I started Cheap Goods. I just came up with the name, like, one day. It's Cheap Goods, you know. I'm just selling the stuff off. And so I started, like, selling everything on the shop. And as soon as I sold everything in the shop, I'm like, I want to sell more. I'm going to keep going. So I hit up Sean McKinney and, like, at S&M, and I was like, I said, hey, man, I just want to start selling a bunch of stuff. He's like, hey, tell you what, man, you sell it, I'll ship it. Dude, I was drop shipping stuff in 2005.
Wow. That's how people are doing it now.
I know, toy. And so I, one guy, I won't say his name, but there's one guy at S&M, a salesman. He's like, dude, Gabe can't do this, man. You can't let him drop ship stuff. Like, that's wrong. So they cut me off from drop shipping. So I was like, fine, man, just ship it to me in Reno and I'll ship it out. So that's what I did, man. So I was selling all this inventory and I never had it. So, and I would go, and I started touring again. Actually, when the skate park closed, like, I went back to being an airplane mechanic for, like, a year in Reno.
Oh, okay.
And, but every single morning, man, I would get up and I'd work on the website, listing stuff, answer emails, and then some shows start popping up. And so when I go on tour, I just have, like, a roommate ship stuff for me, you know.
Okay.
And then basically, like, I was like, man, like, why am I out in Reno now? Like, you know, my house is selling, was like, why am I out in Reno? I just moved to SoCal again, you know, and I'll just...
And
just,
you don't even have to ship it to you yourself.
No,
you
I'll just go drive,
pick it up.
Yeah, go drive to SM and ship it myself. And so, yeah, so that's why I moved to SoCal, and I was actually, it was doing okay, but it wasn't enough to live off. So that was like 2009 when I moved back to SoCal from Reno. And I was actually started looking for like airplane mechanic jobs, and I was about ready to put an application in, and then I get a call from like Matt Hoffman. He's like, man, we need this rider. We need a flatlander for my my agro circus in at Universal Studios. And like, we don't have anyone. I was like, okay, I'm down. And so, bam, started doing shows for Matt Hoffman. And like, I had a roommate. I was there for like, dude, it was crazy. I don't know if you heard about these shows, but we did 6 shows a day, 7 days a week. For like 45 straight days. It was like,
I mean, 6 shows a day.
6 shows a day. And I mean, I only did like, I probably did a little intro and I did like a main part and I did another like finale. So it was like, maybe I rode like 2.5 minutes, 3 tops for the whole show. But yeah, it was like every
Where
single hour.
Where were
these
again?
This was at Universal Studios.
Okay. Yeah. 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 I saw that show.
Yeah.
I saw it with Volker there, I think. Yeah. And Wilhelm was riding.
Yeah. Wilhelm. I think Wilhelm rode. He did the one right before me, because Matt did like 2 or 3 different ones.
So who was riding Flatland when Volker had the incident with the finger?
I think that was Wilhelm, yeah. Oh, was that? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, was that? Yeah, that was the one before
the
that.
The Volker flyout.
I know.
The bike didn't get – he didn't catch the bike in time, the classic move.
Oh, my gosh,
and
yeah.
And it removed a girl's finger. That's quite the story, and that shut down the shows, I believe.
Right after me, because I milked it pretty good. You know, I did it. I know they
paid
got
well, I think, didn't it?
Yes, yeah, super good. Like, super good. The ramp riders got paid good, but it was like, yeah, when you got a little burnout, you get paid every week, and then you get that check. You're like, okay, this is cool. But yeah,
I can stick around a little longer.
Yeah, but yeah, but it was a smaller area to ride in, and so I did summer, and then I did spring, and I did summer, and then winter, and I did like another spring run, and then summer was coming up, and I think and then Matt Hoffman, he went to watch some like shows in like Texas, and Pete Brandt was riding, and like he's like, dude, all right, sorry, Gabe, like you're rad, dude, no hand blender, man, like,
yeah.
I was like,
man,
yeah.
And it seemed like Pete kind of was out of the scene for a while. Came back on doing blenders. All of a sudden, he's like, I haven't heard anything from Pete in like years.
Yeah.
But
he's just laying low. But yeah, so I got kind of replaced by Pete, which is totally fine, man. I mean, he is
he's a machine.
He is the most amazing like show rider, like just straight dialed, man. And and then he did it, and then they canceled it. I think maybe he did like a spring or something.
How old is Pete Brandt? That's a mystery to me. I did shows with him one time and asked him, and he said he was younger than me. And then I hear like he's 50 now. Okay, so he is 50. Okay, all right. Pretty cool.
No, he got it for all of us. And the shows are really cool, man. And then by the time I got out of those shows, like Cheap Goods is like doing pretty good, and just did some random shows after that. And then so that's like 2009, and then like eventually like. Dude, I started getting so many complaints to S&M. Like, I had distributors in like Australia and France and like England saying like, dude, who is this Cheap Goods, man? Does he have like a bike shop? And like McKinney would kind of blow them off. Like, oh, we'll check on it, man. We'll check on it. Like,
we don't know.
Yeah, I know. And then after a few years, McKinney's like, dude, like, just
you gotta get a shop,
man. Like, you know, just get something small, you know.
Get
like,
a P.O. box or something.
I know. I know. Actually, I need like a real store. And so he's like, you got like, you know, got a couple areas you could be in. You could be in Costa Mesa, or you could be in like Oceanside or like San Diego. I was like, oh, 330 square foot in Costa Mesa, like 10 minutes from like S&M and Colt. And so, yeah. And that was one of the coolest things is like, I was running Cheap Goods from like 2005 to 2013. So like, you know, like it's pushing like 8 years, right? 8 years.
Yep.
And, and I had like a really, big like customer base of just S&M and Fit. Cause that's all I could really sell. And they always said, hey man, if you open up a store and you can get Profile or like Odyssey or Primo, dude, we'll just order from you. So when I opened up the shop, I had like customers like, just email me. Here's all the parts I want. Just ship it to me in like a week. Here's the money.
Wow.
I know. So.
Well, you're in there. You're in the scene. You know all these people in the industry. You should be doing it.
Yeah.
But I had to figure where you're located, because you're so close to the beach, it can't be cheap. Like, you could have a BMX shop in Athens, Georgia for, you know, for $400 or $500 a month. But that's not the case in Southern California.
Yeah, but my shop is like $330, so dude, my rent's under $1,000.
No kidding.
Yeah,
no kidding.
It's small.
$330
is small. It is a small shop. It's not that small. I've been there.
Yeah. Really? When did you? Oh, you came here for like one love?
3 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, it's
I hung out.
Cool. Yeah, it's small, but it's packed. But it's bigger than unless it's a BMX specific bike shop that's big. Like, there's a local shop, Epic, that's really cool. Unless it's like someone like them, I have way more stuff than any like mountain bike shop. That's for sure.
pack it in, and you know, and keep your overhead low. That's a smart business for sure.
It's like, you know, everyone's around here, so I just kind of just go pick it up. Or, you know, people are drop shipping now. It's definitely like people have changed their tunes now. That the same people that didn't want me to drop ship, that almost tried me to get banned from S&M, are the ones saying like, dude, you can drop ship anything you want from us.
Yeah, the industry's gotten crazy, hasn't it?
Yeah.
There's no distributors now. Everybody's their own distributor, and this is crazy weird.
So
now you carry S&M Fit.
Do everything.
Profile.
Yeah.
You carry everything.
Every single
Kink?
Kink. Yeah, I got a Kink bike in right now.
And what's your website, Gabe, if people want
to CheapGoodsBMX.com. Not to get mixed up with Goods BMX. We get mixed up every once in a while, and Shad, he's not too happy about it, man. He's like, I've never met him, but I hear that he's like, dude, why is it gotta be Cheap Goods?
Because it's Goods, but it's Cheap Goods. It's a little better.
And then he's funny because he's like, he stole our name. I was like, dude, I started in 2005, actually, so I was actually in business, I think, before you, or around the same time. And anytime Rob Nolly would go to like Portland, he'll send me a photo of Goods BMX. He's like, it's good, but I'd rather shop at Cheap Goods. I kind of joke. Oh, God.
Beautiful.
Yeah, once in a while I'll get tagged in a post, or like I'll get a box of his. And like, this is good.
I feel like you're living the dream, man, because you got the shop, but it seems like you go ride Flatland before you go to work.
Totally, man. When I opened up the shop, I had like, I was open like 12:37. I was late. Constantly. It's like, and I was like, okay, I'll do 1:30. So I opened the shop at 1:30 now. And still,
you get your whole session in.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Get some time in, answer a bunch of emails. And I'm still late half the time, but
people know you'll be there by 2:30.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know. I always thought about changing the hours to 1:30 ish, but then it'd give me too much leeway.
I can picture it now. People showing up at your store and then calling you, and you're at riding.
I know. Yeah.
Totally. Like, oh yeah, yeah. I'll be there in a few minutes.
I know. Exactly.
That's probably what just happened now, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, hey, where are you?
I was pressed for a little time, and I was like, I wasn't going to ride. I was like, dude, I have to ride a little bit just to say, yeah, dude, I rode today. I ride every day.
I know the feeling, dude. Yeah. That's an addiction, man. You got to get a little session in at least.
It just feels good. But yeah, it's basically like, dude, I get up, I go to the beach, and get a little session in, and then get to the shop around 1:30. And I mean, still to this day, like most 70% of my business is still online. So like most of the time, I spend hours in the morning like answering emails and stuff. And,
sure. Yeah. Sure. Hey, the California dream, man. You're living it,
dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And recently things have happened.
Yes.
And you're going to have to tell us a little bit of that, because I'm seeing pictures of this beautiful girl, a woman.
Yes.
And I've been coming to Southern California since the late 90s, and I always hear BMX guys, oh, man, California's great, but girls will never talk to you, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see Gabe's wife?
There's an exception to every rule.
Right?
Oh, my God.
Tell us what happened, man. It's cool.
Oh, this is such a cool story. So it was around like 2019. I was, I ride the beach pretty much every single, the same time almost every day, like pretty much 10 to 11:30, 10 to noon. And, you know, I'm riding the same hours. And all of a sudden I see this, dude, the prettiest woman I've ever seen walking her two dogs. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've never seen her before. And she's walking kind of by me, and I just kind of wave, and she smiles. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, who is this girl? And then
she acknowledged my existence.
I know, exactly. I know. and
a rarity for a BMXer.
Yeah, and no, it was funny because I saw her, and she pulled up in a BMW, and she didn't have a ring on her finger, and she's walking her dogs like 10:30. Like, oh well, she's got something going on. Yeah, I thought she was like a dog walker or something.
And so, like, I was completely, like, blown away by her. And I was like, I hope I see her again. And then sure enough, like, she would start walking her dogs the same time, about the same time every day, like 10:30 or 11.
And so, coincidentally. Yeah.
And so I started waving to her. And literally, it was months before we even talked. Like, I would just wave and, like, smile. And finally, like, we got close to each other, and I, you know, talked to her and found out her name. Her name was Kathy of the Sea. And that was like 4 months. So it was like, I met her in February, and I didn't find out her name till like summertime, like June or July. So I found her name and found out she was a realtor and a nurse. I was like, okay, this girl is way out of my league.
And she's pretty.
You know? Yeah, amazing, like super beautiful and nice and friendly. And she's like, well, here's my card. And she gave me her card. And then instantly, like, I looked her up and I was like, started watching like all her stories, man. Like, I was like, I definitely kind of stalked her on Facebook. Always brings that up as like such like a romantic thing I did to her. So I'd wave goodbye to her. And then we kind of became friends. Like, it was like 6 or 7 months later, we started talking and never talk more than like 5 minutes outside the parking lot. And the crazy thing was, is like, she lived across the street from me, like across Beach Boulevard. Like, Beach is like a big street. A few months after I first saw her, I saw her car parked on the side of the street, and I knew she lived at the apartment complex. Like, literally like 2 blocks from me. So that was super crazy. And so, you know, we kind of talked here and there. And then by like after almost like a, and she didn't even tell me about the guy she was dating and joke around. So it was actually a whole year after I first met her. We just figured out, like, dude, we liked each other, you know? And she actually would only, I saw her like a couple times a week. We'd talk. And one day she came back to the beach, and it was like sunset. And so it was like the same day, it was sunset. First time we ever saw each other twice in one day. And she just walked up to me. She's like, you know what? We should be here together. Like, and she had like, she liked me like the whole time, man. I was so blown away. And then like, finally, when we figured out that we liked each other and it was like probably about a little over a year after we first met, we moved in with each other. We got engaged. We moved in with each other in a few weeks. We got engaged a month after that. And we got married after a month after that. And then we just bought a condo together in downtown Huntington Beach. And it hasn't been a full year since we first like decided we liked each other.
Wow. Yeah, like, congratulations, wow. Yeah. Man. All during COVID.
Yeah, all during COVID, man. And she jokes around. She's like, well, the governor said, like, you know, if we want to spend time with someone, we have to move in with each other. So that's what we did.
Look.
Just follow the exactly. Rules.
So it was like, I think it was like May or something when we first started to date and liked each other like outside the parking lot. And it hasn't been a year yet. So, and she
That's
is just,
crazy.
Yeah, she's turned out to be like the most amazing woman. Like, just it's yeah, she is just blows me away. And she's been through a lot too. Like, she's actually had like a. She was born with a bad valve, and she's had 4 heart surgeries. She has
way.
She's had 3 open heart surgeries. Like, and the last one
breaking open the rib cage.
Yeah,
type
crack thing. It open. She says they crack you open like a tin can, and so
wow.
Yeah, so
three times,
and the 4th time she had like 5 or 6 years ago. She did the what is it? Where you go through your leg. And I forget what it's called.
So is it a valve?
Yes, a valve. Aortic.
Okay.
Aortic.
I know what you're
yes,
talking about.
The main valve. Know, so... Yes. And okay. TAVR. That's what she got done. TAVR. And
so did they put an artificial one in?
Yes. Yeah. It's called like a pig. It's a pig valve. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to work with a mechanic that had that same surgery, and it sounded pretty. I mean, it's pretty involved.
Yeah. She's got to get it replaced like every 10 years. And she's Jeez. One tough cookie, man. Like, and she just, lives life to the fullest. And yeah, so it's been like, yeah, she is definitely like amazing. Takes amazing care of me. And like, you know, it's funny. Like, when I thought she was so out of my league, right? Like, I'm never even going to, like, ask her out.
She is pretty, Gabe. I'm like, what is happening?
You know what? I'm like, if I could go on a date with her, like, there's no way she'll, like, come to the bike shop. You know, like, there's no way this girl's going to want to show up to this bike shop.
What do you got to lose, right?
And now she's like, hey, no, she was so excited to come to my bike shop and hang out. Like, she loves to hang out at the bike shop and help out. And, like, I was like, yeah, completely, like, yeah, blew me away.
If I was
away.
Still single, I'd ask if she had any sisters.
I know, yeah. Dude, you know, one time she even asked me, like, oh, my gosh. She's, like, she's not a girl to, like, ever say, like, she's, like, interested in a guy because, you know, she's definitely gets hit on plenty. But
I'm sure.
She'll be, like, one time at the beach, she's like, I'm available. Like, she was pretty much begging me to ask her out. Like, Yeah.
So you're like the dummy that finally gets it. I know. Oh, okay.
Yeah, when she tells that story to people, guys, like, they want to, like, slap me. But, you know, I was waiting for the right timing.
No, probably the way you played it probably is what worked. You know, if you were, like, hit on her immediately, she probably would have backed
up. Yeah. So,
who knows? What do I know? I certainly don't know.
Yeah. And, yeah. So, that's great, so we've done, it's just been amazing. We got, so we got married, and we just got like a hotel suite, like a big hotel suite, and like a nice hotel down here in Dana Point, and invited like, you know, 20 close friends, and got married there. And actually, we moved all the carpet, and like, she's so into riding, like, she's like, you have to, everywhere we go, she's like, you have to do a show. She's, you know, and it's like she wanted to turn on the rad music, and me do a show for all the people that came to our wedding. So we did that, like, right in the middle of this, like, three
in your wedding.
Yeah, in my wedding. Yeah, 35 at the reception, like 3,500 square foot, like the president's suite at the Monarch Beach Resort in Dana Point. Did like there's some black swirly marks in this expensive. Yeah,
is there footage of that?
Yes,
maybe we can share that.
Yeah, it's on the RAD, the official RAD Instagram. It's on there, and they actually. Like, they got way more hits than any other thing that they post, man.
I feel like I saw it. So, I need to share it. That'd be great. Yeah. That'd be great.
And
well, that's an awesome story, Gabe. I don't think that happens to every BMX.
Yeah, and then we even, like, then she's, like, always promoting me. Like, you know, she handles my Instagram a lot. She's always posting stuff. And then she's, like, kind of pursued this Friar Tux. Like, she messaged Friar Tux, like, hey, this is our wedding, or reception, or engagement photos, and he's wearing your tux, and like, and all of a sudden they did like a full story on us, you know, and like, and she just,
So did that benefit you guys at all, or they just
no? I think it was after everything was already done. So
yeah. Like, hey, you gonna get a free tux?
I know, yeah, no, exactly. But she's still trying to get that on the billboard. She wants to, like,
fantastic, man.
Yeah.
Wow, it's a great picture, the one we were able to share.
Yeah, so definitely, like, so. You had that. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I was paying more attention to the leather pants, I'll admit.
Know,
but
that's so funny. Yeah,
but you're a married man.
Yeah, yeah. And she, man, she handled that whole photo shoot. Another cool thing about that photo shoot is this guy, like, we knew we kind of want to shoot some photos at the beach or something. But she's like, I don't, whatever we do, I don't want to do the photos of in the sand and the jeans rolled up. Like, she was so, like, anti, like, doing something, like, typical, you know? Wow.
Right.
And that's, you know, and
played out.
Yeah. And then, and I was in my shop like a couple months, like right before that. And this guy walks in and he's like, hey man, I want to get some parts. I was like, okay, what kind of bike you guys? Like, oh, it's a Flatland bike. He's like, what? Like, Flatland bike. Like, and his name was Trevor Honey. And, I was kind of messing with him. I was like, Flatland, what's that? He's like, oh man, it's when you do like tricks. I'm like, yeah, I know, man. I'm messing with you. It's funny because Robert Castillo happened to be in the shop too at the same time. And he turns out, like, someone gave him this Flatland bike, and he's getting into it, and he's, like, this professional photographer for, like, Vogue and all these fancy, like, jewelry companies and clothing companies. And and he's like, hey, man, if you ever want to do, like, a photo shoot, let me know. And so I hit him up, and dude, Kathy, my wife, just kicked butt. She picked everything out, like, what she's going to wear, what I should wear, like, you know, what we should do. And, like, it's just, we nailed that photo shoot out in, like, 20 minutes, and it was just, like, it worked out so good, man. Like, she's
so, it was a Vogue kinda photographer.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. Trevor Honey. Yeah, he's I'll send you his link. He does some, like, he does the type of fashion photos that you're like, what? What kind of crazy stuff is this, man? Like, you know, there's like a
well, you know, Matias Dundois, yeah. Like, I'm off.
Oh yeah, 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 totally, yeah, know? Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, if you got a skill and you're a handsome guy, you know, why not?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, yeah, Trevor, awesome. So he did it, and he did such a good job.
Awesome. Well, so we've got about 20 minutes left. Let's do reader mail. You cool with that, Anthony?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do it.
All right, so we had somebody ask some questions by the name of Josh Evans.
Oh, no way. The Josh Evans.
Out of Michigan.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, damn. Cool.
Now, Josh is a good buddy of mine because I lived in Ann Arbor, Michigan for a while. And, this is cool. He asked a couple questions. Now, Josh used to write for Schwinn, for anyone out there that doesn't know it. I believe he replaced Andrew Ferris at one point. So, anyways, here we go. He wanted to ask about the GT show that you had, because we, I believe it was a little bit custom.
Oh, yes, yeah, for sure. So when GT started making the shows, I think the top two was like 18.9, 19-inch tops, and it was like...
It might even be smaller than that.
Yeah, I know, huh?
18.8
or something.
It was tiny. Ruben Castillo frame.
Size Ruben. And I was like, man, I can't ride this. It's too short. And they're like, okay, we'll make you a custom one. So, yeah, they made me... I've been riding 19.5 top tubes for like before that. So, like, we're pushing, like... Dude, since, like, I don't know what the dyno... What was the dyno comp, but... Was that 19.5? But I've been...
The first comp was a little shorter than the second comp, I think.
It's like 96, 97. Yeah, so I've been riding... the mid-school dynos. Yeah, but... I think those were around 19.5, but so I wanted 19.5, and I've been riding that forever, and that's what I wanted, and they custom made it for me. And like, man, the guy who made it for me was Billy Griggs, who was the racer. And he was not happy, man, because he'd have to make me a custom one. And I rode ramps too, man. Like, I'd take that thing to the skate park, and I'd jump like volcanoes, and I'd flat bottom, I'd hang up. And that Billy Griggs is always mad because he knew I was going to snap that thing in like 6 months, man.
Well, it's aluminum. All aluminum bikes. Did you like aluminum?
I did, man. It was stiff. Yeah, it was good. Yeah. So, yeah, I had like, I don't know, 4 or 5, and they're 19.5s. Yeah. I broke them all except for like maybe one or two. I actually sold them, man. Like, I was moving out of Reno. I was like, I don't want this stuff anymore. And they are floating around, man. Like, I know specifically the one that I sold this one guy. I only rode for like a month or two. He stripped it down to all silver and buffed it so it looks chrome. And he put like the Pro Freestyle Tour 87 stickers on it. So it's kind of crazy. Like, one of my first bikes I ever had. It now looks like one of my old bikes I rode on GT. You know.
Did Trevor had a custom one too?
Yeah, Trevor too. Who knows what his top two was? Yeah,
right.
But that was man. I definitely saw the rise and fall of GT, man. Like, it was, it's a.
Did you run the minimal offset Pac-Man forks, or did you run the full offset?
Minimal,
Pac-Man
I've always.
You did go 19... minimal. If you remember, Jason Brown rode the show, but a regular one. Yes. But he always rocked the full offset forks.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I was a big Jason Brown fan, so I copied him.
Man, he was a R.I.P. man. The Jason was so good.
Oh man,
like,
he was good. Did you get to know
a little bit? He actually, I when I did that Branson show, I did a little summer tour. Took off like a month or two because GT wanted to use me, and Jason replaced me. Yeah.
Okay.
And then Jason, like, I'd see him at contests and. It's funny, Jason and Ferris, man. They're always trying to get my job from GT, man. don't think Woody didn't.
Damn Canadians.
Don't think Woody didn't hold over my head, man. If I got into trouble, he's like, man, I get calls from like Brown, I get calls from Ferris, I got Pananza calling me. He's like, so kept me in my
desperate Canadians. You know, they'll work for nothing.
Seriously. Oh my god.
Got to build a wall.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, so he had a few questions here. He just asked about Flatland Fugitives back in the 90s. Did you get to ride with any of those guys? I mean, McKinney, obviously.
For sure. I actually met McKinney for the first time at that the Shinersville contest in 93. And I kind of already knew Jesse. And then, when I moved down there, like, we used to, before I moved down to SoCal, Drew and I used to, me, like, Drew and Mutt, we would take road trips down to SoCal, and we would ride, like, Jesse Puente, and so I rode Jesse, and then it wasn't until I moved down to SoCal where I started riding with all the Flatland Fugitives, like, Obviously, Jesse, Nate Hansen, Edgar, Leo. Yep. Leo. I rode with all out there, man. Like,
I mean, it's everybody that was anybody tried to get out to McKinney's basement. Exactly. I mean, even Aaron Donato was living out there for a while, and I think Sean Burnham moved out there for a while. Yeah. A bunch of like Adam Guild. There's a bunch of dudes.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So now I pretty much rode with all the fugitives, man. Like,
yeah. You were in the spot. I mean, Southern California for a long time was the spot be.
And then don't forget about Day Smith. Can't forget about Day. Yeah.
Oh, of course.
And then,
of course. I think he still rides.
Yeah. A little bit here and there. His name. I actually had a customer come in about a month ago. He knew Day. Day built up some wheels for him. But it's been about a year before I think anyone's seen or heard him. But he's up. Right. He's up in San Francisco Bay Area, like around San Carlos.
Sure.
And
what an influential guy, man. He came on the scene and he blew minds. A powerful style.
He to this day, he's still one of my most favorite riders. Just powerful and like solid and consistent and original. You know, he's always had original tricks.
And,
I definitely rode all the fugitives. And even people call me a fugitive, I'm like, I've never got like officially inducted, but I'll go with it, man. And Mutt will say, "Oh yeah, dude, you're a fugitive." It's like, "Oh, okay, well."
You're loosely affiliated with the crew, kind of like the Golden Gate crew, right?
Honorable mention, honorable induction.
There you go. All right, now Josh asked one other thing, and I kind of coerced him into asking some questions, so thanks, Josh. he asked about a prototype all-purpose frame in the early 2000s. He thinks GT made, and something about Dewback, and then. Bracket Star Wars, and then apparently Kip might have had something to do with it.
Damn, this guy knows his history.
No. Josh Evans, we're going to get on the show because he's got some info to tell.
I thought only Kip and I would know about that. I was working at GT, and I think it was when I got back on GT, like after Giant, I started working with them about making like an all-around bike. Because there wasn't anything like all-around, there wasn't that many 19 and a halfs. Like Andrew Ferris had the, he had his frame through volume.
Right.
What was the name of that frame?
The mid?
The mid, exactly. And man, I tried to ride that frame. It was, the whole bike was all, it was
heavy.
All 049 tubing all the way around.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
Super heavy.
The heaviest bike. I just could not ride it.
And he rode that after riding an aluminum frame, so go figure.
And the reason they said they did all 049 is because he bent top tubes on his whoppers. Or his tail of bunny hops because he landed so hard on that top tube. And, I was working with GT, and I was like, I want a 19 and a half, like kind of like an all-around bike, you know, because that's what I ride. I was riding park. I'd ride Flatland every day, but I'd ride park, you know, a few hours, a couple times a week. Always like...
Yeah, 19 is just a little small. And how tall are you, Gabe?
Like 5'10". Yeah.
19.5 is probably perfect.
So yeah, we did make the Dewback, made like one or two prototypes, but it'd be cool. That's gotta be somewhere floating around here. I don't know where that's at.
So what's the brackets in Star Wars?
Kip, at the same time, he was working for GT, and I think he was working for GT then. It was during like the first time with GT, because Kip didn't go the second time. So it was the first time with GT. So it's probably like early like 2002-ish or something, and Kip, he's a big Star Wars fan, he kind of helped so he kind of helped like design it and like get it going, and it's like, dude, let's call it the Dewback. And it's like a Dewback is like that I'm pretty sure it's that desert big old lizard that like the stormtroopers ride, and it's like an all-purpose like animal.
Okay, the Dewback. Yeah. I did not know that, but Josh would know that too, because Josh and Kip are both big Star Wars nerds.
So that's why we call it the Dewback, because like an all-purpose bike, and like
So that bike got made.
You know, a couple prototypes, but never went into production.
Did you rode
it?
Yeah,
I loved
it.
Yeah, definitely.
I think I remember you riding that bike. Actually, it was a 19 and a half GT. What I remember.
And then there's a bike, a frame that GT made right after that. The Encore, I think, and it was very similar to the Dewback. Very similar.
So loosely based on the Dewback.
But that's crazy. That's the last thing I thought anyone would ask me, was on the Dewback.
Josh is a wealth of knowledge. I use him a lot. All right, so we're motoring right along here. I mean, we hit on a bunch of stuff. Is there anything else you want to chat about?
How about Torrent GT? We kind of like...
Definitely would like to delve into that a little bit. We've got 10,
cool.
15
yeah,
minutes.
Just, man, the Tour Life of GT was so much fun, like, because, like, as soon as, like, we started, like, as soon as I was, like, the main show rider, I started doing, like, all the bike shop shows, and that was, like, such a blast, because we had, like, we would, these bike shops, man, they, like, that was the big, their big event of the whole year, was to have the GT team come there, you know?
Sure.
And...
So it's a party
and,
dude,
we
them.
Were known as, like, the social crew, you know? Because it was, like, me, Dave Volker, Brian Blyther, you know? And then they had the straight edge crew that was, like, Trevor was on there, Kip Williamson, Rob Nolly, Tom Haugen. Mm-hmm. So it was, like, those are the crew that, you know, that you send off to, like...
The non-party crew.
Not the party crew. So they want us to go to specific shops, and those are the shops that want to party with us. And, like... Dude, these shops...
They actually put thought into that.
Yes, Toy. Yes, yeah, Toy. Like, you know? Oh my! And like, one of the best places, like, in outside Chicago... Was it Chicago? Or... Detroit. It was a... Metro Bike and Sport. It was owned by this guy, Don. And Don was so cool, man. They could care less about the show. They just wanted to finish the show up, lock up the doors to the bike shop, and just bust out all the booze, man.
Fire up the grill and start drinking,
gosh.
Right?
And like, and also these bike shop owners, it was like their ticket to get out for the night, you know? Like, oh my god, the GT crew is here. We're gonna go out all night. We're gonna hit up all the bars and like, it's just like,
and of course you have to do that every show.
Yeah, you know. Oh my gosh, you learn how to like ride in like 95 degree weather in with. 80-90% humidity in like Cleveland with a little bit of a hangover.
That's what separates the men from the boys. Are you pro or not?
Exactly. That is.
I know. Yeah. Volker is.
So it was like, man. I mean, I was kind of like a quiet, shy kid, even like when I went on my first tour. But man, you throw me in with the wolves with like Volker and like Blyther. It's like you better learn how to get social and have fun and do fun stuff. And like, yeah. So it's like, so it was a blast, man. It's just like you just don't have shows like that. We're like. They are just so excited to have you. And like, we get, you know, big crowds. And we did some shows with like Hans Rey. We did some like, yeah, we did oh, shows wow. with Hans Rey. And that, I mean, that guy brought in so
That's
many
the
people.
Trials
yeah,
guy.
Yeah,
right?
Trials. He brought in, he's like probably, I mean, other than that last Trials guy that rides for like Red Bull.
Danny McCaskill,
like,
is that?
He was like probably the most well known like mountain biker, you
sure.
know? Like, I know.
Sure.
Yeah, so we do huge shows with him and thousands of people and like, and dude, those bike shop shows are just so much fun, man. Like it was just a big event, and I mean, it lasts for a few years, and then just and, you know, the NBA halftime shows are really fun. I did like almost did halftime shows for almost every single NBA halftime show, maybe like three or four, you know.
Were you riding for GT when they still used the ramp they actually used to fly?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So anyone listening. There's still a ramp floating around. I believe
Rob
Nolly
has it now.
There's a couple,
actually. There's a couple of them. Yeah.
And they could put it in duffel bags and check it onto a plane.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
I kid you not. I know. I think it was like a 4-foot-wide landing.
Yeah.
Or something ridiculous.
Yeah. I think.
And guys are 360
I think, like, 6-foot
in it.
Landing, and then like the takeoff is like 2 feet. Landing. I kind of, and it was like 5 foot tall. I think 5 foot tall. I know all the specs because that's one of the things I did when I left, like, when I decided to leave Giant, I had Jimmy Coleman and I had this great idea to like, we're going to start up our own show business. And so I copied that ramp and I built it with this guy in Santa Cruz, this guy, Mike Woods.
No
and we copied Woody and Robert's ramp. and we started doing NBA.
I'm sure
we started
that.
Doing NBA halftime shows. Oh man, they were not happy, but. And,
oh no. You actually
got
some games.
Yeah, we did. It was mostly just Golden State Warriors because we were already there. You know, we're already in the Bay Area and Reno. And and Robert actually called me up and started yelling at me. He was so mad. And to this day, Robert's like, I don't believe that. I don't remember doing that. He's like, what if I did, would he put me up to it? And the funny thing was, is guess who owns that ramp now? Robert Castillo.
Robert. I believe it. So, I believe it.
So yeah,
That's
we did, there's a couple of them. I think GT had two, and then Woody maybe built two. And then there was a, then I built one. So I think technically there's like five, but they're, those things were not really meant for like a lifespan of like over like 5 years. They just missed.
Right. And I think it was like pre 9/11 because afterwards it got a little trickier to fly with.
The funny thing is like when we go do a halftime show, like only half the ramp would show up. So it turns into like a, it turns into a flatland slash like a flat, launch kicker. Yeah, kicker to like a flat bottom.
Oh, and you're doing NBA halftime. Yeah. I can't imagine doing an NBA halftime show. I my nerves would just,
oh,
I couldn't
God.
Do it.
I had it.
So yeah, kudos
I never
to you guys.
Did like the hardest tricks, but I was always dialed. But to this day, now like I'd be scared to death, man. Like I know.
Nerves.
I watch I watched Pete Brandt do it, and he's just doing his contest run. I was like, dude, it's like I know you're I know you're
machine.
Dialed, but man, to go out there and like on that floor and like. It's like too. It's like you got too much room and it's too perfect. You know,
Yeah. No, it's impressive. Some of these guys. Like, I guess I'm a show writer, but I'm not like that level anywhere near it. I would hire somebody before I did it.
It is. But we did. We did like, NBA halftime shows are fun. Actually, I did. One of the most, the biggest shows I ever did was it was Michael Jordan's last home game as a Bull, and it was a it was 1998.
What?
It was Chicago Bulls in Chicago, of course, and they're playing the Jazz, and I think it was game five, because they lost, and they went back to Salt Lake, and then they won there. But yeah, I saw like Jordan miss his shot, and they lost that game. But yeah, that was Michael Jordan's last home game as a Bull. It was 1998, so I did that show.
Crazy.
Yeah. Just tour life was fun, man. It was like, yeah.
Do you still do shows? I think I saw you doing one the other day on Instagram.
That was
the neighborhood, or what was
my
that?
My wife, Kathy, love her so much. She just wants me to do shows all the time. She like her one of her sisters like, hey, do you think we could have Gabe come out and do like a show for the kids? And Kathy doesn't ask me. She's like, oh yeah, sure, he'll do it.
So you really are.
Of course
married.
You will.
Yes, yeah, I am totally. And it was.
You get volunteer for shit all the time.
It was so funny because like we didn't know if it was gonna be like two kids or five kids. And then we find out like they rented like a snow cone truck, and there's tents, and there's like 40 people out there, and the parents are out there drinking cocktails all day, and I did a show, and like they were pumped, man. So yeah, that was like a little freebie. But I do get asked like once in a while from Robert Castillo, and like I'm like kind of like a snow shot snob now. Like I'm like, I'll only do it on the day that I have off, and if it's like local, like I'm not gonna really like, you know, go drive like a couple hours, and the shop's pretty busy, so like for me to leave it all day, it's like I really don't have to leave, but I don't know, I definitely miss it, man, because it's definitely like a you have to be conditioned, you know, like, you know, if I don't do a show for a while, it's like, oh man, it's like I feel definitely rusty and I run out of breath, but it's definitely after I do the show, it's like, dude, that was like. I just like, that's what I like to do, man. Like I've always been like really into show writing, you know.
Yeah. It is fun.
I think
even
like
fun.
Aaron Behnke, he came and saw a show one time I did for GT. Probably like it was the time I went back to GT, and it was in like Morgantown, and he's like, he walked up to like Kip, and he's like, dude, I think Gabe Weed is the best show writer. So I was like,
well, that's a compliment from Aaron Behnke kind of means something.
Kind of my writing. Yeah.
Much love to Aaron Behnke, but he's a little salty.
I know,
that
totally,
guy sometimes.
Yeah, I know.
See?
Yeah. And so, I don't know. I just got like, the more shows I did, the more I just, you know, got into like kind of flashy spinning stuff and want to be dialed and stuff. So.
Yeah. I noticed the brakes are off. But sometimes
yes,
they're on.
Yes, to this day, I still consider myself. But you hear me? to this day, I still consider myself like a brake rider. You know, like I love riding brakes. Like I put them on for every show. Like I don't think I could pull off unless it was like some little small show. And like, you know, I did some shows with like Matias and like Bo Wade and like Ryan Russell for like the U.S. Open. It was like a little small area, and like we were riding together. And like, so I rode brakeless. But for me to do like a show for like Robert Castillo, I think, man, I'd rather have brakes, you know. I want to hit the ramps a little bit.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I want to go brakeless, but for shows, I need brakes. I just I have more
like,
tricks.
I admit it, man. My show tricks are way better than my brakeless tricks. Like a brake with decades. Yeah, man, it looks killer. And then
But you got to be consistent. Yeah, in a show, it's just less consistent.
Especially
I would
the
think.
Area, and then like the two main tricks, man. Like just doing like really consistent, fast like pinky squeaks and the fire hydrants. Just definitely a good show trick. You know, you can bust out anywhere, any area. And like if you told me right now, like, dude, you're gonna die tomorrow, I would throw my brakes on and do all my old tricks. Because seriously, it's just I have more fun. But as far as like progressing, when I put my brake bike together, I just kind of do all my old tricks. You know, I'm not really learning anything new. But with riding brakeless, it definitely pushes me to like ride a little bit different.
So you get two bikes.
Yeah, basically, like it's almost like I have a brakeless bike, and then next to it I have a full brake bike, but it's missing the seat post, tires, and wheels. So all I do is I take the wheels and my seat and seat post and I throw it on my brake bike. It takes me like 10 minutes to switch over, and I'm using the same tires, and the bars are set up exactly the same, so I could get used to it. And like it takes me like probably like a day before. But I get used to it. But man, that first brake decade I do, it is so sketchy because like it's like way less of an effort. I get stuck in up top, but when I get back in the groove, it's just fun, man. Yeah, because like there's so many tricks that I could do with my brake bike every single time, and I will struggle all day trying it brakeless. Like something like kicking like a tea kettle around, you know, and catching it like a.
Just don't have that safety net.
Yeah, I know,
feathering.
Man. I'm like, but it's
to push your ability.
I still love riding brakes for sure, and sometimes I just get the feel, like even if I don't have to do a show, I'll just get like a bug, and I was like, dude, I just want to do all my old tricks, you know, I kind of miss it.
I get that. Well, it looks like we're at 1 hour 30 minutes, right, and we are trying to keep our time within that, within an hour and a half. We keep going way over. I know you got to open up the shop too, Gabe, but what does the future hold for Gabe Weed?
Man, just like so many things. This has been such an amazing year. Like just ever since I met my beautiful wife, Kathy, like everything has gone so well. Like shop's doing super good. We just bought like a condo together in downtown HB.
Yeah.
Yeah, congrats. Thanks. So basically like, I mean, we're moving in there in like a few weeks, and
yeah, I'm doing the same.
Congratulations, cool. Man. It's like, it's a big deal, man. It's like,
it's a lot.
It's not that easy getting a loan these days. And like, and just like the.
I can't imagine in the market in California. I can't even imagine.
And that's another thing is like, not only did, we buy this place together, but, you know, she was the realtor and she found the place. And she did such an amazing job because, like, it sounds crazy, but places go so fast here. Like, literally, like, they're gone and like
everyone wants to live in Huntington Beach.
There's like nothing really on the market. They're, you know, everything's going like within a day or so. And like she found this spot and we walked in and we loved it and we got to know the owner and she put an offer in and like she really like made it happen. So it's basically cool. Like, so we're moving in actually like next week and she's an amazing realtor. She's working, doing well. And we're pretty much like two blocks away from where we met and ride together and then I have the shop. So basically it's like, I just keep doing like the same thing right now. Like keep consistency, like stay consistent.
You're the California kid.
And
for
we
sure.
got probably we want to start traveling a little bit. So I'll start figuring out how to like, you know, maybe keep the shop open or, you know, juggle it where we could travel a little bit when COVID kind of gets a little bit better and like traveling gets good again. Cause we just,
I think we're all in the same boat.
So basically, like, we got a place together with each other, extremely happily married to her for life, and riding every day, staying healthy, and staying consistent with the shop. And I got so many amazing customers that, like, supported me for, like, going on, like, 15 years now. I just had, like, my 15-year anniversary. So, wow.
You do a BMX show for it?
What was that?
Do a BMX show.
I know exactly. You know, to this day, I still have not had a grand opening.
Man, maybe it's 20.
Maybe a 20, huh? And that's about.
You can always hire the freestyle.
I know exactly. Yeah. Get you guys out here.
I'll show you how it's done.
I know, exactly, man.
Hilarious. Well, Gabe, thanks so much for taking this time to do this. I know this is a really busy time for you and for myself as well. And it's not like Anthony sits around not doing anything either.
Thanks.
Appreciate you guys.
No, this was great, Gabe. I love listening to your stories. The 90s was a bit of a dark period for especially Flatland BMX, and you being there and telling us your stories just brings a smile to my face.
Yeah, it's the 90s are really interesting, man. Like, just like I was listening to your pilot podcast, and you cut me off if I go on too far, but it was like,
No.
How you guys talk about like, is riding more popular now, or like, you know, are people more stoked to get together? And it's like, dude, back in like the 90s, like if there was riders around, we knew of each other, you know, like we got together, we knew each other, like, you know, like if I was driving down the street and I saw a Flatlander, well, still to this day I would still do that, but I'd freak out. But if you saw like a street rider, you'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, there's a street rider. And you know, and I think the riding is so much bigger right now, but people are just not like getting together if you went to like a horror show, dude, you've pulled every single rider in like a 30-mile radius, you know? And like now, if you have like, you know, Garrett Reynolds rolls in, you'd be lucky to pull like every single guy in like 5 or 10 mile radius. If you pulled like every rider that has a BMX bike, and like, there'd be like thousands of people in like a 30-mile radius, you know? So I think it's just like, it's just like more of like back in the 90s, it's like a tight knit group, you know? Like, we always showed up to everything in the 80s too, you know?
Or maybe it was like the dudes that were making the magazines were really rock star status. And now with Instagram, everyone's sharing a piece of that. So it's more spread out, or I don't know.
You're so right, because you want to go see that rider in person for sure. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Hey, you know, one other thing I wanted to touch on, I think maybe Josh had mentioned it, but how did you feel about getting the cover of Ride BMX? Because that's something we didn't really ask you about. And being a Flatlander, I think we all know that rarely happened. Flatland on the cover of Ride, probably a handful of times.
Yeah, I mean, probably it was BMX Plus, and you know, they probably only did like one Flatland cover a year, tops. You know, like
maybe,
maybe. So you could probably count on one hand all the Flatlanders that have had covers on BMX Plus, like.
That's pretty
awesome. I was pumped,
man.
I mean, I did have it in, you know, because I was at the beach. I would do Adam.
Adam
Crockett. No, Adam Booth. I'm sorry, I got him mixed up. His Ben, Adam Booth.
Okay.
Ben Crockett, Adam Booth. Yes, yeah, Adam, the hybrid of them. But pretty sure it was Adam Booth, and like I was in tight with Adam. Adam always wanted to put Flatland in, and.
Was it a fisheye shot?
Yeah, I think so. Like, yeah, I got it. Yeah, fisheye. Yep. And then, I was kind of already had it in with those guys, and I did photo shoots with them like every month. And I was so pumped, man. And the crazy thing was, like, anytime you get a picture in the magazine, like those guys would be like, "Yeah, dude, come down to BMX Plus and just grab whatever you want." You know, like stacks of magazines.
Wow.
You know? Like, you can grab like. If you're in an issue, they'd give you like, take whatever you want. So you take like 5 or 10 copies, you know. About a month after that cover came out, I went to go grab some. He's like, "Dude, we're all sold out." I'm like, "What?" He's like, "I don't know how or why, but that was the fastest selling cover I think we've ever had or issue."
Wow.
So it's like
Flatland on the crazy. Cover. That was a formula.
And, but to this day, Kathy, my wife, will always, whenever she like posts it or says something, she's like, "Fastest, best-selling cover ever." <She's> just... But so they sold out super fast, so I was never able to get like a handful of them. But I anytime they're up for sale, I buy it up right away, because I stock up. I probably have like maybe like 6 or 7, and I actually just bought one off someone on the BMX Museum like last week.
If I was on the cover, I would buy up every magazine I could get.
Like, man, you just
that doesn't happen often.
You just can't replace the feel of like waiting for that magazine and seeing it, or hearing rumors. Like, you'd always hear a rumor. Like, dude, I think you got the cover, and you'd be dying to get it, man. Like, you know. But now it was a big deal this day. Like, it's definitely one of my biggest like accomplishments being on there in Huntington Beach, riding like a GT. I mean, actually a dyno, like. So my dream was to ride for GT, man. Like, I just looked up to all those guys.
All right. Yeah, you made it happen for sure. Well, thanks so much, Gabe. I think this was great. This is going to be a fun podcast for people to listen to. I know I'm going to listen to it.
Definitely a shout out to everyone that supported me, like everyone on GT, everyone I toured with, you know, like obviously the main person in my life that has made my life the most amazing ever, my wife, my beautiful wife, Kathy, and, you know, all the guys I tour with, man, Dave Volker, Brian Blyther, you know, guys I did shows for, like Woody Itzen, Robert Castillo, everyone at S&M, Sean McKinney's a big one, Andrew Arroyo, but,
the monster.
Yeah, thanks to everyone, and just like, yeah, definitely a big thank you to my wife, Kathy, man, I love her so much, and everything is amazing with her.
Well, thanks for sharing this with us. This is great, Gabe. This has been great. I can't talk today.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Absolutely.
Super, yeah.
Well, cool. Maybe one day we'll get a bunch of listeners.
Let's blow it up.
All right, man. We'll go ahead and sell some bikes. I think we all got to get to our other lives, right, so we'll get back to it.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks again, Gabe.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right.
You're listening to Banter, a BMX podcast with John Doker and Anthony Berardi.